I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into our weekly podcast with Dom and Dan here, Readin', Writin', and Reason. I want to go back just a little bit, though. It's about a week or so ago to... We did a big event, of course, on 9/10, but then on 9/11, the big day. And after I got done, I wrote about this at DelawareValleyJournal.com. Got a lot of response, a lot of people complaining. Kids don't seem to know anything. Some of them weren't born. Some of them were barely, not even kids. I mean, an 18-year-old, what do they have living memory of something 20 years ago? They don't. What's their knowledge base? What's being taught in schools about 9/11? And a lot of people have responded to me with this. I'm still trying to talk to Republicans in Harrisburg. Because when I got home after an event Roe and I attended on 9/11, great event over in Roxborough, one of the speakers really bothered me, a Democrat representative, of course, just going on and on and on about why is there not unity? That's not the thing we ought to be talking about on 9/11. It should be never forget, particularly 20 years out, and drill down with that. So I get home, New York Post, the next day, the Sunday New York Post, Andrea Peyser, P-E-Y-S-E-R, great, great columnist. You've heard about her over the years. She had a piece that stunned me. I thought I knew this. One of the ways to get more education about 9/11 en masse, which we need 20 years out, schools have to be mandated to teach it in classroom. Not some ceremony where someone gets emotional, reads a bunch of names, and we don't know what happened that day. Peyser actually wrote this in her piece, that what we're doing now and what some schools are doing, it's kind of like mom or dad or grandma, grandpa went off to work some day in September, and they failed to come home one day. Well, we don't know why it's sad, but that's about it. No, who is it that attacked us? We know who attacked us. We know what they were animated by, radical Islam. Well, only 14 states mandate classroom instruction about the terror attacks of 9/11. Only 14. It's a jumble of places, she writes. A lot of them are in the South, as you would expect, but there are a couple of others. There's one exception I'll give you. So who is it that mandates that kids have to know? You know what you would think, New York. Yes, New York is on there. They couldn't get out of that. But New Jersey, which lost a ton of people, and Connecticut too, they're not on here. Guess who else is not on here? Pennsylvania does not mandate that 9/11 lessons must happen. You got to see the models of some of these states. Some of them are pretty intricate. They're not letting these schools get away with, well, you know, we can't really talk about extreme Islam, radical Islam in this. That would offend some people. Well, Virginia says you have to talk about it. Here are the states: Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, West Virginia, Virginia, Maryland, and New York. A couple surprises there. Virginia, which is now gone. Now, maybe they did it early on. I didn't go back and look when it was more of a red state. And Illinois, which is a quintessential blue state, they mandate it. Why are New Jersey and Pennsylvania not mandating it? Now, if you really care about this rather than just something that bugs you, why don't kids know more about 9/11? The argument is it might be talked about, but it's all the emotions of that. Oh, can you imagine the horrors of being in that building? Yes, 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 we get that. But isn't it more about learning? Particularly, this is not Pearl Harbor. We're not going to be attacked again by Japan anytime soon that I see. But the Taliban, the terrorists, they're still out there. In other words, this is ongoing. We've just seen Afghanistan recently. So rather than this phony talk about unity, isn't it better to be unified, to have all 50 states? I can only speak for Pennsylvania, New Jersey, where I operate. to mandate that schools must teach 9/11. Now, you know, you could have panels of curriculum and all that about what some of the elements of that would be, but it's certainly not just an assembly over the loudspeaker, oh, people died, we're sad. Nope. Got to be a lot more of that. That's it. That's what we should be doing. There's no doubt in my mind. All right. Now, one of the things, too, left over from that, by the way, Virginia was one of the states that told teachers to avoid talking about American exceptionalism. This is not, according to them, an exceptional nation. They thought people might be offended by that. I'm not sure how that's working out. But if there's any day where that should be taught, it would be around 9/11. So, talk, your local school is where you operate. Something else for the school board to look at. Do they mandate in school districts that 9/11, there must be classroom instruction, and we must emphasize innocent people murdered by terrorists, animated by radical Islam, a la what we see playing out with the Taliban in Afghanistan? That's not something you can argue. That's the fact. There's no getting around it. And just think about that memory. Never forget. Have we forgotten? Well, these kids are not getting instruction by and large. Only 14 states out of 50 that are doing this. Is it any surprise New Jersey and Pennsylvania are not doing it? No, they're dithering and politically correct. So something I'm working on, something you can work on, though, in your own local school district. Hey, what did you approve that should be said about 9/11? How is 9/11 being taught? If we're going to go down this constant rabbit hole of talking about critical race theory and all the things associated and the overemphasis on that, why are we not talking about 9/11 enough in schools? By the way, on that critical race theory, now Jeff Daniels, right? You've seen him in Dumb and Dumber. You saw him in Speed, several other things. He's on with Colbert this week. And it's this, I addressed this in the Bucks County Courier Times this week, my biweekly column. They asked me to respond to the head of the Bucks County NAACP. She claimed, as Jeff Daniels did in Colbert, thank God for critical race theory or some form of that, because it's the first time we're actually teaching and recognizing we didn't teach enough in school about slavery and racism and all that stuff. Are you buying that? Is that really what's happening? What school did these guys go to? Now, if you want to talk about specifics, I said in my column, like the Tulsa massacre, I would include that, emphasize that as an example. Sure. If you want to talk about the civil rights movement, I think it's thrilling to talk about that. But America's evolved to do that. If you want to say, we believe the curriculum in the school should be Civil War was caused by the contention over slavery, I'm on board with that. But if you want to tell me that schools, say right here in the Philadelphia area in the suburbs, are not educating kids about slavery, Jim Crow, things like, modern day contentions, give me a break. You just are a dope like Jeff Daniels and Colbert. You're making this up. The guy that's the father that makes the most money out of all this critical race theory stuff, the Kendi guy with all the books, etc., he goes on TV and he says, yeah, kids tell me, oh, he's a college professor somewhere in Massachusetts. Kids tell me all the time they didn't learn about slavery in high school. Imagine that. That's just not true. I went back and I dug up for the column several Bucks County schools talking about the thoroughness of what they do, and they were proud of it. Dozens of them. Give me a break. This stuff has to stop. America has evolved. They are teaching about this. Now, if we want to talk, well, couldn't we do more of this? Okay, that's a reasonable thing. I'm open to that. But this idea, oh, man, so refreshing. Finally, Jeff Daniels and Colbert saying we've broken the code. America is finally going to talk about these things. Where have you been? You're a dope. Jeff Daniels, you're a dope too. Stop it already with that that's the new propaganda to try to say, people that oppose critical race theory for shorthand or remnants of it, all they're trying to do is cover up America's horrific past. No, we're going to use America's horrific past to show the Civil War, to show the fight, the civil rights movement, to show the election of Barack Obama, among other things, to show the evolution of America, second to none. That's the way I see it. That's warts and all. But it's not warts anymore. Yeah, there's scattered racists here. Yeah, that's always going to be that way. But America has evolved and is still moving forward and needs to be tweaked. Doesn't need Dumb and Dumber, Colbert and Jeff Daniels, to tell us that that's not being taught. It took George Floyd to die to make America's classrooms do that. I don't think they're smart enough. I think they're dopes. But too many people are using this to push back. All right, coming up here on Reading, Writing, and Reason. It's great to have a guy who's been a heck of a resource in the Second Amendment over the years. His name is Eric Winter. He's at the Prince Law Firm in Pennsylvania. We called upon him again to give us an update because he's in the center of all these school districts that are suing Governor Murphy over the masking thing, wanting it to be optional, and parents. Coming up on Reading, Writing, and Reason, you'll hear Eric Winter at the Prince Law Firm giving you the latest and what you as a parent or citizen can do to unmask this nonsense of Governor Wolf on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Reading, Writing, and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us, our weekly podcast. Please, it's up on the station's Facebook page, on the station's website, 1210WPHT.com. Share it with people. Make them aware of this. Tell them we're trying to equip you, arm you with the best information and people. And one of them is Eric Winter. Eric Winter is a prominent attorney, the Prince Law Firm, and he's involved with several school boards, parents groups, and really across the state. What's going on with the resistance to Governor Wolf taking away school boards, which have the ultimate power, saying masking is optional? Some are fighting back. Some of the contention is over school districts like Central Bucks, Pembridge, Souderton, and others who are allowing parents to give them a template and say, hey, you want a medical exemption? Just write it down. Why, as a parent, your kid shouldn't be masked up? And they're honoring it. Now it's underway to crush them. And they're really going after a small school district, Tamaqua, out in rural Pennsylvania, because they had the temerity to say, we're not going to follow these orders from Governor Wolf. It's going to be optional. That's it. They're coming after them, even threatening with federal civil rights investigators. So here's how it sounded with attorney Eric Winter from the Prince Law Firm. Hey, Eric, welcome back. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, good afternoon, Dom.
Since we last talked, we know about some lawsuits, Corman and Representative Trooper on their own because they have kids in schools, et cetera. We're hearing rumblings of school districts. We're hearing the Tamaqua School District, a small area, under a lot of fire from Harrisburg. Just give us a few of the things that you're hearing and you're involved in.
Yeah, so what we have seen, and however you look at it, this order is bad governance, because what we saw over the last week is school boards going in every different direction possible on this, because this order is so badly written and so badly thought out. So we now are at a point where we've got school districts who are saying it's up to the parents. They can sign a note, excuse their child from masking. We have school districts saying you need a medical provider's note. We have school districts saying you need a doctor's note. We have school districts saying you need a doctor's note plus medical records. And finally, and this is really disgusting, we have school districts saying that if you want to get your kid exempted from wearing a mask, you've got to submit them for a disability evaluation.
What?
And yeah.
Can you name a school district? Can you give us some of the school districts doing that, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. Give me 1 minute and I can give you a couple. But what we've got, and I'm sure that there's a lot of parents that confirm this, is they are asking for a 504 evaluation. So that is what's going on in terms of that. So
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Eric.
Yep. So from looking at this, Central York School District, there we go. There's one, and I have heard from parents in probably at least 8 or 10 school districts. And you'll also note that the Pennsylvania Department of Education frequently asked questions about these orders has been updated
And it now states that the Pennsylvania Department of Education is not requiring, but recommending that school districts go for a 504 or other disability evaluation of any child claiming a mask exemption.
Wait, you know, let's, for everybody listening, slow down, operating heavy machinery. Eric's right in the center of this.
Yep.
Yeah. The question I had, Eric, and we'll come back to this disability. Let me start with this. Why is it in your mind that Wolf, in his order, or doesn't he have the power maybe, to demand that you had to get a doctor's note, medical provider, you had to have them sign off? Because when he didn't, the school boards we've had on, by my legal judgment, probably yours, were exactly within his mandate to not require that.
Correct. And so what we are seeing is, and we've seen a lot of school solicitors tell school boards they can do this. We've got solicitors telling school boards that they can figure out what the order means and require more than is stated in the order. And
all right, now I want to take you back, though. You said something that is as chilling as it gets, that somebody in Central York, that's the home grounds of Wolf, so that's one, but that the Department of Education on their website recommending now that if you try to go to say there's a problem with the mask with your child, they're recommending, and Dan, you go on there so we can get the exact language while I'm talking with Eric if you can, that you have to go through a disability test. My God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the last thing you want to be engaged in. This is a chilling attempt to bludgeon you, and parents going, well, look, I'm going to have to submit on this. I'm not going to go through a disability type of thing here with my child and make them go through testing to prove they don't have a disability or they do have
right.
a disability.
Right. And if you read the order literally says that you can seek a mask exception for a medical condition and a disability. They're two different things.
Right.
And again, there are plenty of kids that have medical conditions that have a good reason not to wear masks that do not have disabilities. But the school districts are saying, you want the exception? This is what you got to do.
Well, and as I read it, Eric, too, the school districts like Central Bucks here, Souderton, Penridge, they're recognizing the primacy of the parent. And if the parent says, my child had a real problem with this the last time, it doesn't mean he suffered stuff that's going to be unremitting, but it was very bad in their judgment. I'd rather mm-hmm. he not wear the mask. And we understand the risk factors, but the risk factor of the other is worse than the risk factor over not wearing the mask. They're the ones, school boards, following the order, and constitutionally, they have the power. But the pushback of these people, the insidiousness of recommending they have to take disability testing, that's just trying to chill them from having the ability to use their parental rights here.
Right. In addition to all the other tactics that we are seeing, we've got young children being taken into school, and if you're not wearing a mask, you're put in the quarantine room or you're put in the cafeteria, and you sit there by yourself away from your friends all day. Sometimes for the young kids, they think to give them worksheets so at least they have something to do. But again, it's this chilling effect. Or the other thing that we are seeing is segregated classes where you've got the unmasked on one side of the room and the masked on another side of the room.
Yeah. God. So what are you involved in?
What I'm involved in at this point is working with school groups to lobby the school boards and to get the school boards past the fear and looking at the facts. Tamaqua School District, and I've talked to one of their members, I've also talked to a lot of parents in Tamaqua School District, have taken a bold stand and said, we are rejecting this order. We are going to make the decisions ourselves as to what's right for our kids. And then last week, as you'd mentioned before the break, they got a terrible letter from the Department of Education stating to them that if they failed to comply with the order, they better be prepared to face individual liability and should be checking with their personal insurance providers in case they get sued. And again, it's a chilling tactic. It's also legal nonsense.
And I think with Tamaqua, Eric, they told them federal civil rights people might come and visit too.
Right. That was another thing that was mentioned in that letter. And at no point in this entire history of Pennsylvania has any individual school board member ever been sued. And that's because of sovereign immunity. School board members are protected for making policy decisions for their job. They can't be sued over policy decisions. And that's something that the Department of Education and Department of Health are not recognizing in terms of scaring these poor people who, again, school board members, they're unpaid. They're people that love the
right.
schools, and they're signing up to try and help their community. But we've got this level of intimidation going on. We've got terrible lies being told to them about the law. And unfortunately, I'm seeing school solicitor after school solicitor is not standing up and saying, hey, what the Department of Health is telling you is not correct. What the Department of Education is telling you is not correct. And so I put together a handout this past weekend, which is being distributed all over the place. And I talk about what the actual law is in there. And I give 10 questions to ask your school solicitors about the law. And the school solicitor answers them those questions honestly. If they provide the actual facts and look for actual legal citations, the school board is going to see these orders are illegal. They are toothless in terms of dealing with them.
If you could send that, I'll put you on hold with Dan. We want to see that disability
yep.
citing. And also, Eric, if you could send that with all your information on it, I'll put up on our social media that people could ask their school board about this. Then hopefully they'll be talking with their solicitors. And what he's done here, he's done two things. He wasn't precise for whatever reason in what he's mandating. And then he uses intimidation tactics, even though people are inside the mandate, that he wasn't specific enough about.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And wow. we got lawsuits that are working their way through the Commonwealth Court. So there's now two very good lawsuits, one filed by Senator Cormann, one filed by a law firm out of Lebanon County. And both of those are set for responses from the Department of Health next week and the week after. So there's hopes that there's going to be some type of decision from the Commonwealth Court for the very end of the month or very early October. So
is it Wolf driving this? He seemed to be absentee. My theory on this, I'm not on top of it. It's this woman I've centered in, the Beamer, Allison Beam, making her name, heading up public health. Wolf is pretty absentee for whatever reason, according to Republicans. Do you have a sense of who's driving this?
I'm not clear on that. I mean, if you go back and the Butler v. Wolf lawsuit, which you may remember, Butler County won, where they found the governor exceeded his emergency powers. There was a lot of testimony cited in that case that pointed out what an absentee Wolf was. Basically, he had that whole idea of business exemptions back in 2020, back in April and May, and he told the staff, do it, and left them without any guidance, left them without any direction.
Right.
He did not attend the meetings, and they ran this thing into the ground as they were going to, because they were not qualified to do this.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And Allison Beam, she is an attorney. She's worked for the government for most or all of her career, and the order that was issued here is very similar to the orders that were issued last year. So I don't know who's actually writing these, but again, this is such a mess any way you look at it, because he could have clearly told schools how to handle these situations and have made a gigantic mess of things.
Absolutely. Eric, I'll put you on hold. Thank you. And the number to reach you is 888-343-0416. PrinceLaw.com is where to go. PrinceLaw.com. Let me put you on hold, and I'll hook you up with Dan so that we get all that. Thanks, Eric, very much as always.
Sure.
All right, as I said, Eric Winter is in the center of this universe. We'll have him on again. Remember, the show is now noon to 3, the Dom Giordano Show. Coming up, Ian Pryor is a guy we ran into. He writes the Daily Malarkey for parents and others. It's a great little tidbit at the end of the day around 4 o'clock. And he's one of the chief parents fighting back in the Loudoun County area. That's the centerpiece nationwide of all these. This is where it started. Critical race theory, etc. He's next here on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Reading, Writing, and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, welcome in, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on Reading, Writing, and Reason. An old friend of that with a great, I don't know if this is in your email every day, you ought to be getting it around 4 o'clock or so. Ian Pryor is back with us. Ian, first of all, is Executive Director of Fight for Schools. And Ian, in addition to that, which we'll talk about, of course, Daily Malarkey came out of all the stuff that's going on in Loudoun County. What is Daily Malarkey and how do people get it?
Yeah, so dailymalarkey.com, you go there, sign up. It's a 4 p.m. newsletter. It's a couple of us that write it. You know, we switch on and off, and we really try and get to, you know, what's going on in the news, but, you know, a snarky take. We like to mock some of the things that are going on, whether it's the media or cancel culture or, you know, wokeism, and really just boiling down to, you know, trying to reach out to common sense people that see through the, quote, malarkey.
Yeah, exactly. It's clever. It's some things that maybe are not beaten over in the news that are out there. You mentioned this, too, cancel culture. We've been talking a lot this week about Nicki Minaj first, but then Bill Maher going off of that, and Howard Stern joining the cancel culture crowd, at least on vaccination and a bunch of things. In this field, have you found people, are there people, Loudoun County is very, very difficult. When we've talked with Azra Nomani, for example, she mentioned where you guys are in Virginia, Ian, that there have been people that have actually been under socialism, under communism. One of them was a Tiananmen Square witness. And yet that does not seem to penetrate too easily, that kind of gravitas on that school board out there that you're dealing with.
No, you know, it's really scary. You know, this stuff really all started because of cancel culture, right? Like out in Loudoun County, you had this Facebook group, the yes. Anti-racist parents of Loudoun County, and they were plotting against parents who, you know, opposed critical race theory in schools or wanted schools to be open. And, you know, what we've done is by launching these removal efforts against the majority of the school board that was taking part in that, certainly one of the things that we thought would happen is that people would realize, hey, you know, we should stop doing this because we've basically, you know, created a national movement. But no, they haven't stopped. They're still sending letters to people's workplaces, falsely accusing them of crimes, calling them racist, trying to get them fired. I mean, these are the same type of people that are in these groups out here that think, you know, we're going to try and cancel you. We're trying to ruin your life because we don't agree with you and you're not falling into line with us. And it's sad, it's pathetic, but it's also kind of scary.
But I like to celebrate you are winning on various fronts, as you've said, the exposure. What's the website, by the way, for Fighting for Schools, Ian?
Yeah, it's fightforschools.com. Head over there. You know, we obviously use any support that people can provide because we're actually in court now with, you know, one of these school board members, the one that really kind of set off the fire mm-hmm. out here by basically giving a wink and a nod to her supporters to start going after people. And that's exactly what they did.
Do you have school board elections for the Loudoun County School Board? How many are up in November?
So we actually don't have school board elections this November. The school board elections are not until 2023. Now, one of the school board members, you know, recently passed away, which now they have to actually fill the spot on a temporary basis. So that's going to be something in October where, you know, you're going to see this majority left-wing school board probably cooking the books for whoever they want to put in there. So I would expect you'd have a conservative or two that are running. You'd probably have sort of a moderate, middle-of-the-road person running. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they're going to pick their, you know, their far-left candidate. And then in 2022, that seat comes up for special election. Now, if we're successful in removing any of these other school board members, they would also be special elections in 2022.
Okay. All right. So that's on the horizon. But some of the things that have percolated from this, though, I think it originated with either Fairfax or Loudoun or both of them. We see a Virginia teacher this week saying to have kids sit quietly in class, that is a cultural white thing, essentially, to put it out there. And he's been in the news. I'm not sure what's going to – that meth is that way, that sitting quietly is that way, that they have perverted this to levels that are almost unimaginable. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen where those two counties are first, apparently.
Yeah, you know, and what we saw this week, the school board voted on a couple of policies. One of those was a new dress code policy. They basically stripped away any sort of clothes that could be considered things that you should wear to school, right? And now you can wear whatever you want to school. You can wear bare midriffs. You could wear whatever you want to school, but you can't wear something that has symbols on it or words on it that could be deemed offensive or hateful language. So what does that mean, right? What does it mean? Who deems that offensive? Who deems it hateful language? I want to know that. You know, I've got a T-shirt that says, "Proud to be a Yankee hater." Is that hateful speech? I think it is.
Hey, if you're wearing a Dallas Cowboy uniform to a Philadelphia public school, that's going to be a big trouble. I deem that offensive and hateful. You're out. Yeah. If you have a Washington Redskins uniform, obviously, in your neck of the woods, that's out. It's got to be the Washington team uniform.
Yeah, and what we're doing is we're basically assigning people that they get to decide your First Amendment rights based on their subjective impression of whether you should have that right or not, and whether what you're wearing or what you're saying is offensive. And, you know, quite frankly, I could see this thing being challenged in court. It's unfortunate that the whole school board voted for it, even, you know, the so-called conservative school board member. I don't understand why, when they look at these things, they don't say to themselves first, do we have the legal authority under the Constitution of United States and whatever state you're in to pass these things? And they don't go through that process. They just go right to, you know, hey, let's pass it. This is, you know, this falls in line with our commitment to culturally responsive learning and not having discipline anymore, because, you know, discipline is inequitable and not culturally responsive. I mean, we're breaking down society at the elementary school, middle school, and high school level day by day.
Now, Eric, Ian, what are the policies as far as masking? That's what the big fight is here. Several schools in the Philadelphia area, prominent, wealthy, highly educated, have made it optional. And parents, if they object in some of them, they have said you can fill out this medical form. If you say it as a parent, it's causing distress, that's good enough. We'll honor it. I would assume where you are, it's pretty heavily masking.
It is pretty heavily masking. And, you know, I talked to a gentleman the other day in the parking lot of the school board meeting, and, you know, he really had a sad story. He got a medical exemption for his child, and they wouldn't accept it, and they didn't have room to put him in virtual learning, so now the kid's out of school when you've got two working parents. Now, hopefully he's able to resolve that. I know he was working to resolve that, but these are the kind of things that parents are dealing with, where, you know, you have these mask mandates. They don't really want to hear about your religious conscience. They don't want to hear about your health conditions. They want you masked up. And now what we have is the athletes, if you want to take part in sports in the winter and the spring, you have to be vaccinated. And if you're not, you don't get to play sports. So basically you're mandating it for athletes. And you know, there was a study in the United Kingdom today that basically said, you know, it's not really the benefits don't outweigh the costs for masking from, you know, 12 to 18. Now, you know, I haven't fully read that study. I know there's opinions on both sides of it, but the fact of the matter is they are not considering both sides of it. They're looking at it from one way, and they're making those decisions really based on what I think unions are telling them to do and what, you know, the state government is telling them to do.
Absolutely. Hey, Ian, thanks for the great work that you do and behind the scenes with some of the guests that we have on. Again, give the website for the parents group, and then something people will get at least a chuckle, if not a lot of great information, a snarky chuckle, the Daily Malarkey. Start with the schools, then give us the Daily Malarkey again, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to help support our movement, I mean, look, we're Lexington and Concord right now here in Loudoun County fighting this fight. So go to fightforschools.com. Appreciate any support that you can give us. And if you just want to have a laugh and you don't want to pay for anything, you just want to get a free laugh and some free mockery of, I don't know, pick your poison there up at the Biden White House, go to dailymalarkey.com.
So glad that came out of it, Ian. Thank you very much. You were made for this moment to be plopped down there in Loudoun County, and love it when we see you on Fox also. Thanks for joining us on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. Ian Pryor with us here. Again, someone who just fits the bill. He had a background for this, great communicator, and you'll love DailyMalarkey.com. Coming up, more of Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Reading, Writing, and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, welcome to our final chance to talk with you this week on Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano and Dan. You know, just in the last day, we had Constitution Day on the 17th every year, September 17th. And I began Reading, Writing, and Reason, this podcast, this week's episode, talking about this push now to have kids to mandate. Why do we have to do that, Dom? 9/11 has to be studied in school, in classroom, not just some little assembly they do and forget about it every year, because it's necessary. It's not being done for a lot of reasons. Only 14 states do it. But what about Constitution Day? Now, I don't like this, that it's a federal law, but did you know there is a public law, a federal law, that states that get any kind of fiscal largement from the federal government, and every school does, they have to provide proof that they're teaching on Constitution Day material about the Constitution. Kind of makes sense. So what are they busy doing? Is that too many mandates? Look, I'm sensitive to that. But Constitution Day comes and goes. It is the backbone. We've seen it in play this week. We've seen it with General Milley. He's admitted now that he made the call to the Chinese. That's all my job. We're going to see under testimony if he admits he told them what he apparently told Bob Woodward. Told him, don't worry about Trump. I got that stuff. He's not getting nuclear weapons. I'll call you if they're going to attack you. You don't have to worry about anything. You're dealing with General Milley. I'm the unelected president of the United States, so to speak. So Constitution Day. One of the greatest things that they don't teach in school around this, kids say, hey, look at this. We have people running for student body president, something of that nature. It's a popular vote. What the heck is up with this Electoral College? Instead of the genius of the Electoral College, there's no sense of the impact the Constitution has on our lives. The only time, in fact, they seem to hear it is when somebody says, well, Roe v. Wade is in the Constitution, which it's not. It's a found privacy right there. So more has to be done in the schools around this. Now, here on Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom and Dan, our moments this week around COVID and what's happening in the school, I have two of them. The PIAA is a big bureaucracy that runs mainly high school, but sports across Pennsylvania, okay? So they're running into a situation where it's alleged some schools, in order to avoid an opponent, or because they have one star, a couple star players, or quarantining going on themselves, allege they don't want to play that week because of COVID. And now there's a crackdown afoot to stop that and demand that they have to reschedule, or they're going to scrutinize these claims of COVID, we can't play. Who would do that? Who would be claiming this, that a football game is worth that much, that you would be bringing this in order to try to gain some kind of edge? And the answer is, apparently it's happening in high school sports in Pennsylvania. Who knows, maybe across the country. So we'll be on the lookout for that. And to end Reading and Writing and Reason this week, you know, I believe that Children's Hospital is the world's best kids' hospital, bar none. Two of the people over at Children's Hospital, David Rubin and Susan Coffin, authored a piece that appeared in the Philadelphia Inquirer, headline, Fear is Our Worst Enemy When It Comes to COVID-19 in Children. And in there, these experts from Children's Hospital lay out the idea that, yes, while pediatric COVID cases are numerically increasing, the disease has not become more serious in children. While more children have been hospitalized, they write, in this wave than prior ones, the overall numbers nationwide remain low. Pediatric hospital census that they have from the American Academy of Pediatrics weekly report notes that the proportion of children in hospitals, nearly 70% have been in the South. Okay, so it's not widespread across the country. They're saying children's hospitals, even in the South, are not being overrun. And they go on to talk about these are the facts. They said, while we tend to focus on school safety plans as the primary way to protect children against COVID, the best intervention is to surround them with vaccinated adults, ensure every adult they may encounter is also vaccinated. In other words, they're not getting this in school primarily, or maybe significantly. It's due to the outside world. Now, this gets back to the big battle. I also told you on the Noon to 3 show now with Dom this week, there was a pediatric infectious disease editorialist, female here locally, claiming that Bucks County, where the big masking fight is going on, has become the face of extremism. That extremists are out there in Central Bucks schools and Penridge and all these places promoting optional mask wearing in schools. The battle's going to come to a head. It's making its way through the courts. I predict the Commonwealth Court, probably sometime in mid-October, I want to say, is going to rule that the Secretary of Health and Governor Wolf Manhack do not have the ability to in a draconian manner put this on all schools. The school board should make that determination, and double figure school boards in our area are going to say optional masking. Then it will go on to the state Supreme Court. All right, I don't know what's going to happen there. Given that rogue court, anything could happen, but that's how it's playing out. That's where it's going with this. So we'll keep you informed with all this stuff. Now, what I'd like you to do is this. When you're listening to this each week, you're involved with it. You know we're bringing you on people, particularly in our area, that are on top of all this stuff. Our guest this week, Eric Winter, gave you the inside look at how that's going on with schools and masking and who's doing what. Just tell people about this podcast, Reading, Writing, and Reason, wherever they want to get their podcast or on the station's website. 1210WPHT.com, 1210WPHT.com. That's where you go. That's where you get it. Please share that with them. Get as many people as possible. We're coming up on the school board elections. We're coming up on cold and flu season. We'll be talking about that and a million other issues that involve schools, particularly in our area. Think about what a week it was that I believe, due to the Biden non-work policies, the Philadelphia public schools are reduced to asking Harrisburg to have the National Guard drive buses to take kids to school in the Philadelphia public schools and or Amazon drivers of some sort. And nobody thinks something's amiss with this, where this is what they're engaged in, and we're only this little bit into the school year. These are not well-run organizations. This is ridiculous. But tell people about this podcast and let me know of anything you hear that you think is pertinent. Thanks to Dan for producing, as always. Dom Giordano with you on Reading, Writing, and Reason.